all art is collaborative. A lot of people will be super paranoid. They'll think, well, my story is too much like X, or my story is too much like Y. And there's definitely a point where that's not ideal. But at the same point, you look at, like, you look at Hamlet, and Hamlet is the Spanish tragedy. You guarantee you that some aspects of Hamlet are pulled from someone else's work. You see that in everything. Don't be afraid to wear your influences on your shoulder.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road. Hi everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that invites guys who are incognito. With me today is Guy Incognito, who is a guy who is incognito. I'm going to poke fun at this for a second here. Has a spelling error in his Discord name.
Oh, I know. I was going to, if you didn't, I would have. It's not a spelling error. There was already a guy who was named Incognito, and I'm lazy.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Then you can like, save an entire letter. That's nice.
Yeah. Plus, this way, if people want to find me on Discord, it's harder, which for me is a plus.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Like, who would want to be found on Discord? You can join my Discord, by the way, if you click at the link below. The
podcast. See, no, we're getting the plugs. We're making the plugs work through comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, comedy in, air quotes. Because apparently people have no taste and tell me my jokes are bad, but... It's really hard to find people who have like that lack of taste. Okay, so tell me about this. This is going to sound super weird if I say it like this. So tell me about your book, Orphan, and how did you write it? Why did you write it? What is it about? Maybe start up with that, and then we can just...
Oh, God, the elevator pitch. I hate when people ask me this.
Don't give me elevator pitch. Tell me what makes you excited about writing it.
So what makes me excited, I've been reading Lit RPG for probably, like, I think I got into it back in 2017. It's one of those weird, little Google makes a weird recommendation. I'm like, oh, what's this? And then I read through it. I'm like, oh, that's really neat. That actually seems pretty cool. And I think I'm trying to remember what the first book I read was. It was awful. I think it was, I don't want to say The Land, but it might have been The Land. It was just very early. It was just very early work. Like it's when the genre is like really not coming together. And I thought, I was like, oh, some of these are neat. I read a couple of them and I sort of fell off. And then I had a friend who sadly passed. But he was a big fan of, Everybody Loves Large Chess, which it's pretty good. I like a decent chunk of it. There's some of it. It's a little weird, whatever. But he got me, into reading through that, and I pretty much devoured all that, and I kept reading, and I've been writing for a pretty large number of years, but I never really delved into anything that I actually enjoyed. I guess we'll get to the story here, because it'll sort of lead into what I'm doing.
Yeah, sure. Do it.
So I started back in 2014. There was something awful. There was a post on there where somebody was like, I'm making a lot of money writing erotica on Amazon. And I was like, that doesn't seem like that makes any sense. That doesn't. And so I read through and a lot of people got into the first set of self-publishing back then. It was the first frontier of Amazon's Kindle stuff was smut like everything else. Same as, how film started out with awful. Yeah. And VHS. I did that for a long time. I made a decent living. I was able to support myself, able to support my now ex spouse. Took care of, put her through education. It was good work, steady work. Eventually I switched into romance because Amazon didn't like it after a while. It made them a lot of money and then it got embarrassing. And at that point, I switched to romance. I did it for a while, but at that point, I was starting to... I'd been at home too long. I needed a day job. I needed to be in a different place. And I just sort of fell off from writing for quite a while, but I kept reading Lit RPG. And last year I started working on a couple of different projects, and Orphan was the big one that I felt that would be the best way to start to get my name out, because it's the most, it's the one that hits most of the things that make Royal Road work. It's serialized. It's got a good progression. It's got a lot of legs to it. Like my personal favorite story, which I'll probably tell you about later, but the one I'm most proud of is something that probably won't be released for a year, 2 years, 3 years, because it's going to be a single one and done, like, you know, 150, 200,000 page book, and it'll just be its own thing. But yeah, sort of, I guess, go all the way back. Orphan is a Lit RPG story. It's about a titular orphan who is found by some scavengers and gets brought to the local prevailing military and told, well, you know, you're someone who has class levels, so you're going to be put into the military, but you also have really, really, really high potential. And since these people are nice and legalistic, they decide, well, you know, the letter of the law says you're a conscript now, but the, you know, if you look at it, you squint, we could probably stretch that out for 18 months, a year, somewhere in that range. And so they take him off to train. And that's sort of where it kicks off.
So kind of like, you're a soldier, Harry.
It's the reason, like, a lot of my choices are based off of trying to find what makes people like Lit RPG and what works specifically within the genre. A lot of Lit RPG is isekai, and the reason why is because it works with the fish out of main water character. That's the whole reason. I'd say 90% of Lit RPG is that. But it's not that I don't like isekai, it's not my particular favorite way to start, because it's I guess overdone. I wanted to hit something where you have a person who is that same sort of, you know, doesn't know anything, needs gives you some opportunities for explanation and story, but at the same point has a connection to the world, has, you know, is built in. And where a lot of the aspects aren't, oh, this is a weird little thing that no one has understood, but is instead just, this is how the world works. You know, you wake up and a lot of the things that are in the story are still, like, all of our regular physics still exists. There is electricity in my story. They don't use it in their current place because they're out in the boonies, but trains exist. They use ships to get from place to place. So, coal.
But wait. How is your character going to get, like, really OP and super wealthy by inventing oatmeal?
He is not. He is not very... I don't want to say he's not smart, because he is So I'll tip my hand a little bit. I don't think I've mentioned this on the actual server yet, but I find it very funny that right now two of the top Royal Road stories are Iron-Blooded and Orphans. Because a big chunk of my character is based off of Mobile Suit Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphan. The main character in that is a sort of stubborn, up in his own head main character who likes hitting things with big things. And that was a big portion of my initial elevator pitch. It's a stubborn person who uses a big sword.
Yeah. Awesome. There you go. I mean, like, there's... Okay, so like this is kind of like goes back to maybe some of the stuff that you said earlier, right? So the like, why is everyone isekai'd? Why is everyone orphan? And it's sometimes I feel great about it. Sometimes I'm like, I understand why they're doing it, and it's good. And other times I'm like, it makes things a little bit easier, right? Because there's no attachments. You can and I think that maybe that's the reason why people like doing this isekai thing, because it's a completely welcome trope that people just forget about the world. It's like, I got isekai, whatever, right? I didn't have any friends anyway, whatever, right? Yeah. But I don't want to like talk about another book.
You don't want to be negative,
No, the positive. Like Ben Gray does it super well in Oh Great, I Was Reincarnated as a Farmer. Because in theory and practice, the entire series is about a guy getting over the fact that he has been isekai'd and he's never going to see his family again because he really loves his family. Spoiler alert, if you have ever read a Ben Kure book, you know that this guy loves writing about loving families, which is fucking amazing. All of his books are just fucking great. You should just read them. And like to go get back to the main point is it's super easy to have like a main character who's driven because they don't have any attachments and they're making their own thing, they're doing their own thing and they're forging their own path. But to close us off, there's a meme or a picture on the internet going like, hey, why does every D&D character have a tragic backstory and it starts with their parents getting murdered? And then the answer is like, because happy, content people usually don't go out seeking glory and death.
Yeah, that's like a big portion of my story is why does my main character, like, why is he motivated to grow stronger? Well, because he doesn't really have anything else. He lived in a, you know, lived in a rundown basement for the first, you know, God knows however many years before the start of the story. And hey, here's a whole bunch of ostensibly nice people who are giving him things and teaching him things. And yeah, well, like he's you know, 15. If I had no backs, you know, no real like attachments to the world, that's definitely something that I would do. I think isekai, just to touch on it briefly, because I've been reading, just devouring it. I think it's Elides. Great story.
Oh yeah.
Same general conceit. Elides sort of hits. It gets away with the not caring too much about the previous life by dint of being like, oh, I was bedbound for 90% of my previous life and I care about my family, but there's not much that, you know, was to speak of. And that's definitely one way to do it. I think it works great there. So in summary, isekai is a land of contrast.
So yeah, so like the way that I thought about doing it, because to be quite honest, I kind of like, my book is like, I main character is isekai'd and then ostensibly gets isekai'd again, right? It's a little bit of like a regressor fantasy, but then in the end it's like not everything is as it seems, and the truth is like far more devastating than before. But I forgot to kind of make her like to tell the reader like why they should care about this main character, right? So I toss them in the middle. It's a Emilia Rakes story, and I really want to fucking write an Emilia Rakes story. But the thing is, like, you can't start an Emilia Rakes story,
that's okay,
and then have the character also be like in the middle of a like depressive spiral. Like, there's not much that makes you go like, yeah, I want to hang out with this character, right? Yeah. Because like you don't know what's going on, which makes it hard to go through the book. And then also the main character is kind of like weird and bad and like, like not bad, but like sad. So yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but so, not a lot of people like to read about sad people.
Yes. Well, there's a whole literary genre out there and critics love that shit. But, so, but the point is like critics buy a couple of books. The audience buys the rest. So, I almost forgot how we were going there, but so like you can also basically skip the entire first life and go like, hey, in that life I just kind of, you know, got over it over the couple of like 10 years. I actually writing a pre thing right now. It's like took me 1 week to kill my first person, and then took me like 20 months to get over the fact that I would never see my friends again, like something like that, right? And that could be kind of, that could be fun. I mean, that could work. But in the end, circling back around, and maybe doing a quick more detour, so Z Scott, who's writing he's writing Level One God, which I still very enjoy. Enjoyed.
I ate through every book that he has on one as soon as they, like, I ran out of things, and I was like, oh, this seems nifty, because I've been going through this sort of touches on the maybe another thing that we'll get to, but as a good piece of writing advice, if you're going to do Lit RPG, read everything, including the bad. I looked at it. Can't say I love the title, because I looked at it assuming, oh, this is going to be a bad one that I can have some takeaways from. And I got into it and I was like, oh, and it is 5 a.m. and I work tomorrow and this is bad.
And it's like chapter 1 through 4 are like kind of weird, because, you know, there's like a bunch of sexual humor in there, and there's like, I don't know, like a gnome with a tramp stamp and nipple piercings. They're like, what the fuck is happening here? But then it gets to like chapter 4, 5, 6, and there's a little bit of genocide. You're like, what the fuck is happening here? And then you go through that and it's like, like, I really like that. It took me a while to get into it, but it was really, really good. But the way he does it is he has the main character actually like forget it, forget the life that he had before. And then it's for him as if he's gotten isekai just then. But he realized like, oh shit, no, actually I've done this. So my family must have been dead for at least 300 years now. And yeah, like Rick and reconciles with that a little bit. And I think that's also okay, because there's no real, like, it's easier for people to be okay with something if there's a finality to it, you know? It's not about like, I have to go back.
I think the at least for me, the best is like the only real crime with isekai is the hand wave. It's when it's I got hit by a truck. I arrive in my new destination and I just roll with it and I never reference it again. And that's, I get what you're doing. You're trying to end up at the exact same point I did, which is a fresh main character in a fresh setting that you don't have to, that you can explain through the world because he doesn't know what the heck's going on. But if you just skip it, you miss all of this pathos, you miss all of this, you know, you don't really get who the person is, or alternately your main character comes across as a sociopath, which ideal. I won't speak to the specific book, but there's a book that I read. It was one of the ones that was on my bad list. I started up and there's an isekai in the first, you know, I think that was technically, it's a more of a system apocalypse where it's, you know, oh, we're in a system now. And then the main character just immediately goes off on a murdering spree as if he started booting up World of Warcraft and just started playing. And it's like everyone you know and love is dead. Every person you've ever met has just been horribly murdered, and you're super excited about your level up stats. It's weird. It scares. I don't want to be alone in a room with this person.
What can I say? Murder is very cathartic.
Actually, if you did that as a villain, I would actually be a lot more okay with it, because it's like, oh, okay, it's a sociopath. Now we're reading a story about a sociopath. At least that's interesting.
I mean, I'm thinking about how to make that work, right? How can you make that work? And like, yes, as a villain, that's a very good idea. And also, I think what we can try is, the villain. And then maybe there's a bit of a redemption arc there, you know? So, maybe they do get over the fact that all their friends are dead by just killing a bunch of people and feeling really powerful, right?
Yeah.
Because in the end, that's what it is. But then you need to really lampshade that. Like, you need to, like, put the spotlight on this and go, like, yes, this guy is not okay.
But yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you can do it. It's just you have to acknowledge that that's what you're doing, because the like I said, the cardinal sin is just using it as a complete framing device and then dropping it entirely comes across as weird.
Yeah, and except for when you make references to pop culture.
Yeah. Well, of course. Yeah. Obviously.
Okay, that's another thing that I'm that's a sin. I'm not saying it's always bad. It's referential humor can be very, very good, but like referential humor can be very good, but you're always relying on someone else's material,
and all things in moderation.
Exactly. And like my point here is basically saying to every author out there, you're good enough. You can write your own jokes. Like, it takes a while. It's hard, but just try and do it. For example, like, to quote, like, the really big one, right? In Dungeon Crawler Carl, no one, like, there isn't even, like, one catch thing that people are like, oh, wow, like, that's always the joke. Except for maybe the fact that, like, the dungeon master has a foot fetish,
the
right?
Foot fetish,
like,
yeah.
That's, which is, like, yeah. Insane. Matt Dinnerman, oh, my God. but, sorry, I didn't say it properly. Dinnerman! Yeah, he still hasn't come to my podcast. He hates me. I don't think he even knows I exist, but that's fine. But still, we're enemies. No, I'm kidding. So the point there is, like, he fights monsters, right? Like, I don't think people give Shirt enough credit for it, because it gets lost under all the hubbub of, like, oh, Jason is just so sad all the time, which isn't true. Because he's got the thing with Crystal Wash. He's got the thing with Clive's wife.
Yeah.
Right? He's got the thing with, like, fuck it. I'm about to read, like, book 10 and 11, but I
you're ahead of me.
Forget. Spoilers. Yeah. Yeah. Who was that? His family owns an academy.
Remor. Rufus.
See, there you go. Right?
I read.
There you go. Yeah. No. Yes, obviously. As you mentioned, it's super important to read all this stuff. But Rufus' family owns a school. Yeah. Is also, like, a joke that's in there.
Yeah, and you can, because that's the thing, is he'll mix, you know, some referential. I feel he goes a little hard on it sometimes. I think about the 15th Knight Rider joke. I'm like, okay, I get it. You're quirky. This is the manic pixie dream girl protagonist. And that works, don't get me wrong. It clearly works.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, as you point out, he's got a lot of referential humor, but he also has a lot of his own humor. He has things that that are unique to his story that work. I think as you're bringing up Dungeon Crawler Carl, that's probably the best of referential humor, because it's not just like, hey, here's a reference, you know. It's here's a reference, you know, within the context of the story. Like, a lot of the quest jokes will be things that are references, and that makes sense because the whole thing is a pop culture nightmare, so it works extra well within that context. So you have to give him bonus credit when he does reference.
Absolutely. Something about the way you said that just made me crack up. But yeah, like, it's just really, really good. Like, it's I know. I still can't read book 6. I really want to, but I just can't. Like, I can't get over that heartache again. I just can't. It's too well written. That's the problem with it. It makes me feel too many things.
The thing that peeves me about him, and I one day maybe, but the thing that peeves me about him is he just has such a good grasp of reincorporation. It's one thing that I have always struggled with. It's probably, if I had my single biggest flaw, it's that I'm not good at reincorporation. Hot Fuzz is a really good example of this. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Okay.
British comedy, police, murder cult. Hot Fuzz is great because Hot Fuzz hits everything about two or three times. Every single joke in that movie is referenced, then re-referenced, then re-referenced in ways that work. Like, there's a famous one where it's, you know, who around here has guns? Well, farmers' mums. And then in the big action scene towards the end of the film, you see a farmer shoot at them. Then the farmer's mom takes a shot at them. And it's like, that works. And that's one thing that he is just incredible for, is hitting something multiple times in a way that reminds you it's there and then hits you with it. He's really good at, like, Chekhov's gunning for the same sort of thing, usually within the same story, which is, you know, like, anytime you get something introduced, it's not just, here's the new thing, it will solve the thing in 30 seconds from now. It's, here's the thing, it'll solve the thing 200 pages from now when you've almost forgotten it exists.
I okay, I know Matt edits. I know he does it.
Oh,
there's
yes.
no way in hell he doesn't edit all the stuff in. And as Neil Gaiman said, foreshadowing is what happens when you finish the book and then go back through it to make it look as though you knew what you were doing the entire
time. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, that's so, honestly, that's one thing I'm going to do when I, like, my goal, like, Royal Road, I don't get me wrong, I'm putting it out as a, like, as a, I feel it's a good enough work as is. Like, with my story specifically, the serialized version I'm putting up is probably not going to be the finalized version that I submit to Amazon, because once I get the opportunity, I probably will go back and, like, there's already things that I'm noticing where I'm like, I wish I'd done this slightly differently, or I wish I'd done this slightly differently. I have like 400 pages of notes, which is too many pages of notes. But even then, there's still about 400 pages. I've got a dabble sheet with like about like 500 tabs. It's bad. I got an Excel sheet. It's unpleasant.
That's a book. That's what you call a book.
Well, keep in mind that some of those pages are like, remember Steve. And so I have individual pages for, I have a lot of stuff. I am not well organized.
See, what I do is I take all those notes and put them underneath the chapter that I'm writing and then just delete them as I do them, which is great because then I forget that I already did them and I'm doing them again.
Oh, there you go.
Shit. Okay, so but you have this sheet. Okay, go on. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So I just have like a sheet of things that I work on, or like that I reference for locations, and I have sheets for plot points going out, you know, God knows how long. Because I know, for once, with something I'm writing, I actually know how I end it. Because I was very much, especially when I was doing romance, I was a pants writer. I would just be like, oh, this seems like a good thing. Because frankly, I don't care about this. I am writing this for a paycheck. But now that I'm doing something that I actually give a damn about, I like to be able to know roughly where it's going. Like, I know the entire full first arc. I have point by point by point of what needs to happen to get there. And then I'll fill in details. Individual conversations will be different. But then that's the stuff where when I finish, I want to go back and I want to, or like when I finish, I want to go back and do copy edits, do full on like content edits of like, I feel this would have worked better a chapter earlier. Or I know some of my amazing people have already made a bunch of comments where like, I think I've got one of the big things in my story, for example, is people don't, the main empire that's being addressed in the story right now are the Vitrians. And one of their main things is they don't lie. They don't lie about things of material significance. It's not to touch on politics, but it's sort of based, I got it stuck in my head based on current politics of, you know, how we're kind of in a culture where sometimes the truth is hard to find because people will lie just because they can. And I liked the idea of a culture where that's explicitly bad, where if you get caught lying, like if you go up and say, I never said this, or I never promised to do this, that if people can prove that you did, that's a serious crime. But one of the issues that I had was that the way I first described it when I was in the early chapters, people were thinking that it was just lies. Just, I am a little teapot, short and stout. Oh, I'll stab you. I'll stab you to death. How dare you? whereas it's very explicitly like things of material significance. They have actors, they have, you know, and that's the sort of thing where it's not even just like a specific edit. There's chunks that I'd like to go back and reincorporate, fix, touch up, etc. So, and yeah, he absolutely does that because that's the only way you do that is by going over it 7 or 8 times.
So, that's actually pretty good. I think actually that should bring us to the next question, right? What's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
This one, amusingly, I'm going to steal. I had it prepped. James S.A. Corey, the authors of The Expanse, they have a tweet from a couple of years ago, and it's, people always ask, were you borrowing from Stargate? Were you borrowing from Mass Effect? No, once and for all, we don't borrow, we steal. And we mostly steal from Fred Pohl, which is where Mass Effect and Stargate stole from too. All art is collaborative. A lot of people will be super paranoid. They'll think, well, my story is too much like X, or my story is too much like Y. And there's definitely a point where that's not ideal. I've seen stories on Royal Road where it's like, you are literally the exact same story I've seen with the serial numbers filed off.
Yeah,
that's sort of odd. But at the same point, you look at Hamlet, and Hamlet is the Spanish tragedy. You guarantee you that some aspects of Hamlet are pulled from someone else's work, and you see that in everything. And so the best advice I ever received was basically that, which is don't be afraid to wear your influences on your shoulder. Just about everything that is good in art pulled from something else and then made it their own. Elves, like fictional elves, that's Tolkien. Yeah. It just is. 90% of fantasy is ripping off Tolkien in one fashion or another. And Tolkien was ripping off English folklore.
Yeah. Like, so, generations of grandmothers just go like, he thinks he's hot shit, but... But yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
to steal stuff.
But at the same time, you make it your own. Like, a lot of the formatting, or a lot of the initial, like, design for my system notifications, for example, that comes pretty closely out of Everybody Loves Large Chess, because I don't think anybody's done it better than them in terms of if you want, like, really crunchy stuff. A lot of I look to things like Primal Hunter for some of the ways, like, for inspiration on some of the ways the system impacts on like how people live there, like how damage affects you, like what does HP represent, for example, because that's a hard thing to visualize. D&D's been trying to do it for 40 years and they're still like, I don't know, it's injuries.
It's hard, right? Because, like, it's injuries aren't just damage, they're also stamina.
Yeah.
Right. And they affect you differently. Like, I can, in a real fight, I can give you 1 point of damage and like a throat jab.
Yeah.
And you still would be dead.
Yeah. Right? And that's something, like, for my story specifically, one thing I've been touching on is the concept of, like, I have conditions. That's sort of my answer to how does HP work, where, oh, if you get your arm blown off, it's not just that you lost HP, it's that you have a arm blown off condition that needs to, you know, could theoretically be healed with an absurd amount of healing over time, or this or that. And that's sort of, like, that was my solution to it. I'm still not sure it's the best, but it definitely works for me. But a lot of people will be, just overall, I know a lot of authors will be afraid to admit where they came from. They don't want people to look at what they did and go, oh, you're taking from this and this and this. If I were to give you a list of every inspiration that I had, you'd basically at the end of it, you would go, oh, okay, I see exactly how he ended up here from that. But then you can look, H. Bromegra, I don't know if you've ever watched this stuff, your audience might have. He did a really good breakdown of Ruby, why he was disappointed in it. And one of his major takeaways was you wanted to do Avatar The Last Airbender, but you didn't really understand why they did those things, and you didn't incorporate much else beyond that, beyond really, admittedly at the time, really good visuals, like, you know, Monty Ohm's like incredible fight scenes. And as a result, you had really shallow world building that didn't work, because what you did was The Last Airbender, but stripping out the things that made that work and not putting anything else in its place.
It's basically like a pale reflection, right? Like a simulacrum. Yeah. It's So conversely also, don't be afraid of being accused of stealing, right? Because this is going to sound super, super dumb, but like me and the intellectual, like what I like to do is I like to, when I read, I don't like to do it, it's the wrong, strong word, But sometimes I think about like, hey, how could I do this differently? And then my entire like thought process goes off. And then I write it down and I feel really smart for about 10 minutes until someone else goes, oh yeah, just like in that other book. I'm like, oh, God damn it. Right? Because that's also what happens. Yeah, like it's normal. It's okay. Mm-hmm. So, like, to be honest, like I want to be really proud for a second. And that's why I'm telling this. But like, my favorite way of dealing with health, basically, is the one I came up with in band. And that's basically everyone has infinite health regeneration, and you can regenerate from everything. Mm-hmm. Some hits take more mana. And so basically, or like force or whatever. And so basically, your health pool is like a separate mana pool that allows you to regenerate. So if you get mm-hmm. like decapitated often enough, then you're out of health. Because regrowing an entire body takes more time than regrowing an arm or finger or yeah. kidney, right? So that I think that's fun. I think it's a fun yeah. thing. And someone must have done it before me. So
The Primal Hunter did it.
Probably. Oh, okay.
It's very, very similar, but you know what? It works. If it yeah. works, it works. And if it's like, I was originally, that was going to be my take on it as well, but I wanted to, mine's a little bit less multi-universal in scope, and I wanted things to be more, you know, if you get cut in half, you're probably going to die.
Oh yeah. So yeah, bit of a bummer, because I was really looking forward to, people Sharinganning like entire universes, like I don't know, but yeah, could be fun. So okay, your advice is steal things, do crime. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Thought crime.
Become ungovernable. That's every time yes, I see one of those. Like every time I see one of those. How do I avoid getting my story plagiarized? It's like, first off, if someone's going to steal your story, you've already made it, and everyone's going to know they stole it from you.
Yes.
If they don't, then your story, like with respect, your story is not worth stealing. It's sort of a catch-22. I've never seen an instance with like you'll see plagiarism like that. You see it usually in studios more than online stuff, because like you used to see that not Carl Sagan, I can't remember, one of the big sci-fi authors got ripped off years and years ago after they pitched Isaac Asimov. Jesus Christ, how did I forget that?
Yeah,
Asimov got ripped off because he pitched a story about a robot cop, but he pitched it to a network rather than posting it somewhere online, and yeah, that's how it gets stolen. But if you're publishing your story online, no one's going to steal it, because by the time they can do it, they can't.
There's also nothing new under the sun. Like, we live in the postmodern now. Like,
that phrase is stolen, modernism.
Yeah. I know. Oh, I
no,
know.
I mean, the Shakespeare stole it.
Like, I know. I know. I don't know who from, but I know everything. Like, Shakespeare was the biggest thief of all times. But
it works.
And this was his genius. Yeah, he could just make it better. It's not a crime if you can take someone's idea and go like, move over, scrub. Right? Yeah.
It's the referential humor thing. You can do it yourself, but then you just do it better. It works. Yeah. And that's your solution to your health thing. You just do it better.
Yeah. You just do it better. Which is just why Clive's wife is so, you know. See, there you go. Thank you. My God, poor Clive. He's such a nice guy. And that's another point, right? Like, you love these characters. Ah, that's so good.
Yeah.
But anyway, shout outs to Heath Miller, by the way, because Heath Miller's like a big part of how like narrators in general. Like Travis, Andy, Heath, and like Jonathan McLean, Jeff, oh my God, Justin, they're all so good. And it's it's just like going to the opera or like the theater with an RE, where you can have the same core idea of something, but people read it differently, and the entire story becomes differently. right?
That's one of those things. I hope to one day have an audiobook for my book. When I do, 99% of it, I look at it and go, I trust, like, I'm going to get someone who I've listened to a bunch of books for, and I'm going to trust them because I know I am not an audiobook guy. But like I was mentioned in my End Matter yesterday, I introduced a character, and he has a very specific, creepy way of speaking. I think that's the only time in anything to do with it that I'm going to be, okay, I need you to do this exactly like this. I'm going to read it out for you. There's, what's the name of the story? Machines, Am, giant supercomputer, the I Have No Mouth and I'm a Scream. Took me forever.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know this, but the author did every audio version of the supercomputer, Am. Every single audio, like the radio plays, the audio books later on in his life, every version of that story that had an audio version, he did the voice of the computer because he felt he was the only one who could nail it. And I was like, that's neat. But also for a man who does not do who's a writer and not an audio guy, he does it really well.
Probably because he did it like 15 times.
Yeah, practice makes perfect. But
okay, so like I'm gonna break a lance here for the narrators. Some of them are really cool with it. Some of them really aren't. Right. So you always have to like figure out like who are you working with. And then like people like Jeff Hayes, like Jeff and Justin and all the people at Sound Booth, they just go like, no, come on over. Like, tell me how it's going. We're going to do it live. We're going to do it like on YouTube. Actually, shout outs to Sound Booth Theater Live. Like, it's really good. You should go.
I want to work with them so much. I love his like the Sound Booth Theater is my personal favorite. They are my goat.
Yeah. And like shout outs also like they did so Rhett Bruno, so the guy who runs Aethon, right? They did his recent book, and I think if he's ever going to release another one, they're gonna do it again, and there's gonna be like there's music in it. And my god, Jeff Hayes has this like really, really good semi-Russian strongman accent. It's so good. Yeah. Or like voice, I should rather say. And but so these people like Dave Alcomet, like hey, just tell me, just go on. Sometimes some authors, some narrators, I don't know for sure, but I think Travis would be one of them. They can just do it. They know it, right? And like what they need is pro tip for every author out there, because I've been handing a bunch of manuscripts now. What they would want is for you to write down a quick summary of what the essence of that character is. Like, write down the rules of that character that you have in your head. Like, band example, like, Waverly is a werewolf with ADHD and super excited about everything, and she's blue-eyed, bright-eyed, and bushy-tailed. That's the entire thing. That's her thing, right? And so, like, do that. And then, like, flip off anything you want off of this. It cannot be wrong. Right, like if you're reading through He Fights with Monsters 1, like you know who Jason is, right? You know that character, and then it goes back to writing. God damn it, give your characters personality.
Well, there's a lot of, and that's part of what I'm like. I think of anything to do with my story, even if I'm being.
You know what time it is? That's right, it's a new ad, and this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is my friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one, so go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time.
Well, honest, more than financial, the thing I'm most excited for it is an audiobook, simply to hear the take on it, because a lot of things like Primal Hunter, I read the first book and I liked it. It was pretty good. It was good. And then I listened to one of the audiobooks, and I was like, And I was like, okay, now every time, now I still read them, but now I'm just doing the audiobook read in my head, and it works, and it's it's wonderful. It's weird how the human brain works like that, because...
All hail Travis Baldry. All hail! And like it's... No, he's really good. Oh, and by the way, a quick shout out. He just recently made a post on Facebook, and I want to repeat it. If you send out your he made an announcement, not a shout out for me, but if you hand over your manuscript to your narrator, make sure it's gotten a really deep and thorough dev edit, and not like like line edit,
yeah,
and don't like or copy edit. Like I don't care. But don't just edit it yourself and be like, oh, that's good enough, because your narrator will have to actually edit the things for you, and that's not what they're getting paid for.
Yeah, WhisperSync, right? Amazon will knife fight you if you are not identical to the text that they put in, because I think it's like 1%, there's like a 1% margin for difference with WhisperSync, because it needs to be able to match up when you switch back from book to thing. No, that's one of those. That was one of those things I learned many, many, many moons during the romance blitz, because my first stuff was not particularly well edited, and I'm pretty sure an audiobook author right somewhere out there has me on their wall with darts in it.
Like, yeah, and like sometimes if you're like Travis is very professional about it, but if you're looking at his stream sometimes and he's like, I gotta edit this again, you can feel his pain, and. Travis is, we can all agree, he's superhuman in some way, shape, or form. Even his patience is tested by a text.
Yeah.
My God, have you angered our deities? Like, you do not want to be that person. So, like, pay for a copy edit. And this goes out to something I want to talk about. It's like another thing. Hobby horse I'm riding, I guess. Don't get your book AI narrated.
Oh my God. Just I had offers, so many of them, and I was like, no.
Because like, you do not break the fucking picket line. You do not stab the people who make our genre great in the back. I will fight you on this. Anyone who goes like, oh yeah, but like no publisher wants to pick up my book, so I have to get it AI narrated. I'm like, no. If no publisher picks up your book, it's because, and I'm going to probably say this, I'm probably going to get into like a fight with it for it, but like, I'm very sorry, but then your book just isn't good enough. I'm raising my hand. Like, the first version of my book, no publisher wanted it, and fuck it, I'm reading through it, I'm like, it's good, because I don't want to be known for this book, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's my
pitch on it. And like, I'll agree with you, and I say this as a person who, back in, again, it would have been like 2013, I got like a Kindle 3, like the one that had like the 3G in it, and back then they had a little audio jack in the bottom, and you could do you could have it do text to speech, and I loved that weird little thing that talked like this, because I could listen to it while I was doing other stuff. I loved that, but that's not a real audiobook, like. I did that because I was dirt poor and because I don't even think Audible was doing any genre book that I was interested in at the time, which is why I did listen to it like that.
Yes, and also it's not resurrecting the corpse of Jame Duty Dench to pretend that you are listening to her read something. It's so there's this wonderful series called Rivers of London by Ben Aronovich. Yes. Everyone should get the audiobook on it. Because Copna Hope Booksmith just takes it, swings it leisurely, and then knocks it out of the park. Like, my God, Copna Hope Booksmith is so, so incredibly good at this. I would, like, if I had a character that would fit him, I would break a leg to get him on it. But so he, in one of the books, spoilers, there's an evil magician. Who has found a way to preserve the mind in a corpse, right? Like kind of necromancy, but to shock one of his like gang rivals as urban fantasy, right? He sends them like this beheaded head like it's just the head. And then magically he forces air through his lungs, like through his like larynx.
Yeah, so he can speak.
So he can speak and compels his mind with a gale to say the words that he wants him to say. And that is the best description I've ever heard about like AI narration of dead done by dead people I have ever seen. Yeah. It was written before AI was a thing, but still, like.
AI, I understand why people use it for covers, because you got to have something eye-catching if it's a business for you, or if it's something that you want to do, that's the only way you can get it. I didn't.
To be honest, like your cover looks as though it could have been AI generated if you'd fucked around with it for like 10 hours and then also like recompose it and everything. But I think I know who did it, but the point is it fits in the genre. It's well done. And my personal take on it is if you expect to earn money off of it, you share the joy, right? You share the money. And if you don't make enough money off of it, then you have to get better. Like writing is a business and you have to pay the people that you're working with. Like not paying your artists, not paying your narrators, not paying your dev editors, not doing all these things, does two things. First off, it makes you look cheap and people will not buy stuff. Actually, there's like a big study on it. If people see the word AI on something, they distrust the company immediately.
Oh yeah.
Which I think is fun, right? And it makes it look cheap. And if you see an AI generated cover on Amazon, no one's going to buy it. Like no. I guarantee you, no one's going to buy it. Also like the whole like AI narrated thing, people hated that they couldn't filter it on Audible. Audible was became unusable for a while because you could discover new stuff. So it makes you look cheap. It will reduce your sales. So, and number two is you're looking like a bit of a pariah in the community and you don't want that.
Yeah. You're just going to piss off a giant chunk of people. And I think Royal Road's take on it is pretty good, which is, if you're a hobbyist and you want to use an AI cover, no one's going to stop you. But if you're publishing something, spend some money on someone. Give an artist, you know, the time of day to get you a cover that is appropriate for your work rather than just whatever AI slop can throw together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So that's that part done. I still need to talk about agile coaching. No, I'm kidding. It's a thing on the podcast. People got to fill their bingo cards. But how about this? We've already like probably breaking the time bank here.
Yep.
But question number three, now that we're 90% through the podcast, the time.
Real quick.
What's one thing that you would do differently now that you didn't do before, or one thing that you learned that you think would you change?
I think the single biggest thing is I should have had more backlog. I have about 10 chapters ahead, but a lot of them are, poorly edited. My general writing style is not good. Even after I publish, I'll usually get at least one or two like, hey, I think you did this wrong. But my first drafts are awful. They're atrocious. My punctuation's bad. It's the way I work. I write very fast and then I go back and fix. I'm one of those people.
Yeah, okay.
Getting a backlog ahead of time, I actually put my Patreon on pause for payment because I just don't have anything for people to buy, and I don't want to be charging people money if I don't have anything for them. And it's bad. I know I'm working.
Oh my God. Sure. You're not good guy, Greg. You're good Greg guy.
No, for me, that was the single biggest thing is I should have probably waited, but speaking frankly, and I did not expect it to do as well as it did. I have no real presence, in the community, because my regular Reddit account, I would, but I, again, it's attached to my regular name. I don't want to be known as the author who also did a whole bunch of less savory stuff. Yeah, let's just call it that. Yeah. So it was sort of like, just, I'm going to try. I'm a brand new author. Let's see how this goes. I expect to see some interest, and then we'll go from there. And then it blew up pretty substantially. I did a couple of ads, but not, I haven't spent a lot of money on it. Probably spent more on the cover, to be honest, which I liked.
Some people make like commission character sheets from the D&D characters.
Yeah.
You got a cover for your book. Same hobby. Yeah.
And ultimately, like, I think just having a little bit more of a backlog, because I have a bad tendency of not wanting to disappoint people once I've started something. When I miss a chapter, I take it personally, and nothing wrong with being open. I struggle with mental health. I have for most of my life. When I was a younger man, I was pretty heavily bipolar. I'm much better now as an adult. I got my foster kid. I'm a good member of the community, but I take things personally when I can't live up to expectations, and having more of a buffer would have been helpful. But overall, I think that would be my take.
I think you're doing fine.
I'm gonna be honest, I have no idea why I'm here. Like, I looked at the rest of your books, and I guess you are just hurting for other authors. So I'm like, I recognize this person and this person and this person and this person, and then my random story on Royal Road. Okay, I'll take it.
So I'm gonna, because you were honest, I'm gonna be honest back, right? So the reason why was, like, I have been so busy, I haven't read. So I've just recently gotten the time back where I can actually read. So between my full-time job, then doing the podcast, doing my own writing, I'm spending 3 hours writing every day, right? And then also, you know, like, the whole agent stuff that I'm doing, right? Like, I had like a big, big bunch of people that I had to sell, which is great because now my friends have money. It's great. But otherwise, it was a ton of work. Also, like, I had to learn everything. I had to, like, get all the publishers and, like, trap publishing and, like, all the fucking, like, strategy.
It's a lot
to
do, yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, at the end of the day, I just, like, laid on the couch and was like, I can't move a finger. I'm out. I'm done. And, like reading more felt like work in two ways. Because, this is what I could write. And then also, oh, maybe I should sign this person. Like, no. No. So it took me like a long time until I like really got back into this. And so now I'm just picking things back up. And also, like I said, I haven't recorded podcasts for about a month or so, month and a half. I have been a guest on some podcasts, which are like really cool. Big shout outs. Yeah, big shout outs here, for example, to Aaron Frail's Horror Show. He had me on as a guest for the first one. And then there were some others. You can find the link below if I don't forget. And then, yeah, that sort of like stole my time. And so I'm not hurting for authors. Actually, people are approaching me a lot. And I always feel a bit bad about going, like, hey, look, I can't invite everyone to the podcast because the way it works is. Yeah, exactly. And then, like, if I let one person in where I'm not like 100% convinced by their story, then I have to do it for everyone, because otherwise I would feel really bad about it, right? I'm really about that fairness and honesty and quality. I really want to promote books that I would like to read or I would love to have more of. And this is through for the very first episode, right? And yeah, sometimes I read the books before I actually do the podcast. And sometimes I like read the first couple of chapters and go like, yeah, he's doing something or she's doing something. And I really want to like know more about that. So that's how the thing happens. So if you want to get on the podcast, write your story.
Yeah.
And if it's good, then the Maddox fairy will come to your inbox. Actually, no, I shouldn't say if it's good. It can be very, very good, just not my cup of tea. Yeah, if it's my cup of tea, too. I will come to your inbox. So just you can also just join my Discord to be nice. That also helps, right? So, yeah. So, to sum it up, biggest thing that you would like to change or do better next time is have a better backlog, because you believe that you need to have perfect chapters before you put them out to your Patreons.
I need to have like acceptable chapter. I will at some point I will find a advanced copy of my chapter and you'll look at it and it will drive you mad like you're looking at a Cthulhu nightmare. Yeah.
Hey, I recently re-uploaded all versions of Torchbearer. You can read the first version that I just wrote down. Like, don't care. The second version where I was like, oh shit, this thing needs some line edits. It need a dev edit. Maddox, what are you doing? And then the third one is, well, the one that's on there right now. So you can read all three. Yeah. And you can like look that's at it and go like...
I like that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I can see how he has improved his writing. Or you can go like, what the fuck? He's so bad. So I don't know. Whatever you want to do. Just don't comment that, please. Just be nice.
Yeah. Be kind.
Yeah. Like sometimes if you can't say something nice, just don't say anything.
Yep.
It's like a thing. But yeah, anyway, I've grown numb to the pain now. The words of Maxime Durand have come true. He said, and I tried to quote, and Maxime, don't hate me for this, but I'm going to try and imitate your French accent. At the beginning, it's always terrible, but after the 50th, 60th, 0.5 star, you're just like the bites of a mosquito. So there you go.
I will have to live those words. I a little bit of a behind the scene for me, but I was on a nice crazy run. I think I got as high as 27 on. Overall for a brand new story, etc. I was like, this is insane. And then just, I hit the front page. I finally got on the number 8 and it just, just beat me down.
And this is why I recommend to everyone to fucking disable your ratings.
I had my spouse, she lets me check once per day now.
Awesome. Yeah. I was thinking about hiring someone to read through the chapters, like not for me, but for some of my clients, read through the chapters, summarize the feedback, and then just give them that feedback, right? Because like that's what it's good for. And like maybe like screenshot some really good ones, pick out some that are like fair criticism. And then put those up, because like you also want to have some mental strength on this. You don't want to be super like on it. But
the funny thing is, community wise for me, I have nothing but positive. Like I think I get maybe one negative comment a week, like actual negative, like this is bad. But everything else is just people being like, oh, I love this, or oh, I love this, or thank you for the chapter, da 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 da. And even when I get, because I think I caught my first two bad reviews this week, which was killed me for a moment. Then I went and looked, and I'm like, oh, you gave super supportive 3.5 stars. I don't care what you think. I could not in the slightest bit care what you think.
Yeah, it's like some people are out there thinking they're writing for the New Yorker, right? If that's your thing, if you believe that going around and giving people 3.5 stars, which is subjectively, because if you're looking at the rating median is 4.21 across all Royal World stars, Royal World stories that have more than 100 followers, the median is 4.21. So anything below that is subpar. The everything above that is better, right? So the median isn't 2.5, the median is, or like 2.25, because we have 0.5 stars, but the median is 4.11 or something. And if you rate a story worse than that, which starts at 4, by the way, then you're saying that the story that you read on Royal Road on is worse than average on Royal Road.
Yeah.
And if it's above that, it is better than average. That's how it works, actually. Right? So yeah, and like I think my friend Sasha, he goes by Raja Sud, he writes Endless Apocalypse, which is
nice,
a horror story. Have you read that?
I have it on my list. It is I think third it's from a trip. The top right now.
It's a trip.
I get through Elodies and I can't remember what the second one is right now. Oh, it's gonna bug me, but it's on my list. So
yeah, it's it was originally called Final Boss Best Friends and had like a really cutesy pixel art cover of like two people sitting on a swing looking at a dragon, right? And I clicked that and I read it and I was like, the fuck is happening? Because like it's a very like a numbers got power story, right? Yes. But Raja has impeccable prose. Like his prose is evocative like nothing I've ever read, and it makes me so uncomfortable, right? Matt Dinneman is good when he writes horror,
yeah,
but Raja, like he's been a short story writer for like the longest time, but his prose, it will warm its clammy fingers into your heart.
It's got like a Lovecraft vibe of like that.
Yeah.
That like, I don't like this. I shouldn't be reading this.
Like, why can't I fucking stop?
Yeah.
Like that sort of stuff. Like it's like his writing is like the most insidious drug. And like so he's quick aside. He's recently is like, hey, I want to write something fun and lighthearted. And my joke with him is always like, he just can't. Like, no way. Like, everything, like, Raja Sud writes, like, and I can't spoil the story, but it involved, like, his fun and lighthearted story involved waking up in a pile of corpses with, like, blood smeared on the walls, like, in, like, writing of, like, you will never get out or something. Like, this is very fun and lighthearted. And then my favorite artistic contribution to the community in the last year has been... a meme that says on the top, you should write a beach scene. Beach scenes are fun and lighthearted. And then Raja Sud, colon, and then there's a picture of Omaha Beach.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Right?
That's like, grim. That is unpleasantly grim.
But that's like, that's what you're in for in that book. But the thing is, if you are in for that, my God, is it good? It should really get really give it a try. But
it's Elodies, Hell Tutorial, which I'm not looking forward to, and then
yeah. All right. Question number four: what's a book that you love, and why is it awesome?
100th Run. Not as well known as people as it should be, to be quite frank. I really like it because it hits a lot of the same vibes as Dungeon Crawler Carl. I think it's really effective in terms of being a good regressor story where you get that, like, it's really good at hitting sort of the perfect run part of Perfect Run, but as like a full story, which I think was a really, really good function. It's lit RPG, like the actual gameplay aspects of it, if you want to call it that, are very strong. They really get a good feel for what for having them included in the story. Because a big thing I have a problem with lit RPG is stories where they include stats, they include numbers, but none of it matters. It's window dressing. It's number go up, but nothing functionally matters. That's a big thing that like I strive to avoid in my work. A big thing of what I think works really well in stories like Dungeon Crawler Carl, where every time something gets included, it's, as I mentioned earlier, like it's reincorporated. If his stats go up, that is important. It's not just stat went up for the sake of stat going up. And I found 100th Run was really good for that. It also has probably the best romance I've seen in lit RPG. It actually...
It's the R word.
But the thing is, it tells you right up front. It's got like a neat little... Or it's got like a little romantic scene to set the stage for the story. But it does it while giving a whole bunch of exposition. It never dwells on it, but it does it in a way that's like, oh, this is a charming addition to an otherwise really good story, and it works. Yeah.
I I was talking to Ravensdagger, and I was mentioning like story I'm writing, and this is gonna get somewhere. This is gonna go back to the hackathon. And I mentioned, like, I posted like a picture of like two characters I was writing, and it's like, hey, they're best friends. And he just sent back this gif of like this guy going like, oh they fucking right? I was like, no, they're just friends. And so actually I included that in the book, but anyway, so romance in lit RPG, that's hard. Pun intended here, but like, yeah, that's I have standards, bog standards. Get it? Because it's bog standard isekai.
It's bog standard.
Have you read that? That's
very, very, very good. I have not. I got compared to it recently, down? And I'm like, I need to.
I'm not gonna bug you with those anymore.
No, you're good. Honestly, I don't. It sounded like bug. Yes. Your accent. No, yes. I'm blaming the accent this time.
Yeah. to inflict mental pain on people is probably the best thing in the world. Conan was wrong. So okay. Sorry, you were saying box standard.
No, we're saying romance in lit RPG.
Romance, okay, yeah. Yeah. You were.
I mostly hit my point there. It's definitely tough. Like, it's not. I feel if you're going to include romance in lit RPG, just because of the way the genre works, and speaking as someone who's written romance, I have had enough of it for seven lifetimes. Hitting the key for doing it in this genre, I think, is to just have it be like a side dish. It's something minor that gets added, gets mentioned. Like Primal Hunter does it in the aspect of every so often, like every book or so, he'll be like, and he, you know, hangs out with this chick who's clearly into him, and then they screw, and then the story continues. And you know what? That works. Yeah. Primal Hunter is the quintessential power fantasy. You're going to have someone who has quick one night stands, and it works.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. I kind of liked it the way he fights his monsters did it. How far did you get?
For which one, sorry? Book?
He Who Fights His Monsters.
I got to the first major chunk of romance, and yeah, it worked there too. It was never a big thing.
Yeah,
just, I felt he was trying out for a will they won't they that I don't know that worked as well as I would have liked, but at the same point, yeah, I think it was definitely effective. It was not intrusive, but added some depth to the characters. It works.
And like, spoilers for the next 2 minutes, but like in the continuation of the story, like you can't hear away, sorry. But in the continuation of the stories, his romantic life very much gets like put a spotlight on that, like he doesn't have any. Mm-hmm. And then he does, and then it's used for dramatic effect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think, yeah, I don't want to like talk smack about anyone. Like, my only wish is that, like, I have wishes, as everyone does, and I wish that aspect would come up a little bit more. Because I feel like maybe that's just like my own like personality, right? Because I'm a very like people person. I love being around people. I love having partners. I like hanging out with them. Just like, I don't know, like put a little box in my apartment or whatever. Like just have them all the time. It's great. But I think for a person like Jason, I think they would want that security that comes with a relationship, but. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm saying it out loud, he gets that through his circle of friends, right? Yeah. And that is really well done. Like, that thing is like the entire climax of one of the books is one of his friends trusting Jason implicitly, even though he has all these like weird, evil, like flesh-eating powers, right? So
I think that's okay, like good. for romance just in general in lit RPG, I think, like I said, it works best as a side dish, and it works really well when you have characters where it's not just these two characters see one another and instantly fall in love, and there's 15 chapters about their romance, but it's like two characters who have mutual respect who are in the same like human relationships.
Yes, it's like I think it's a very European point of view, maybe, but so Brian Norton wrote Quest Academy. It's huge on Facebook and not huge on Reddit or something like this, but that book is really fucking good, like really, really fucking good. Brian deserves all the accolades he gets for it. And I've always given him shit about the fact that people ask if it's harem, because the main character, within the first like 10 chapters or 11 chapters, the main character, there's a girl coming over, and like the main character just like does something for her, like, hey, like look, I did this. And she's like, wow, this is really cool. I'm feeling really hot right now. You want to fuck? And he's like, sure. And then they do that. And then it's just a one-night stand, right? And like, this is a recurring character. Like, she's nice. Like, I like this character. And she's like, comes by, he's like, man, you want, like, and he's like, doing anything? He's like, nah, not really. Like, this is one-time thing. He's like, yeah, cool. Like, that's also how relationship works sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Where you try out something and it's good, but it's not like, quite what you're looking for. And that's one of the parts I really fucking loved about this book, is that this whole like college experience where you do something like that. I mean, maybe it's different. I mean, I went to college in the US, and my experience was certainly like that. But I don't know, maybe I was also like the tall, hot German guy. I don't know.
I think, and maybe it's just me being, you know, 40, I've settled down, I've got my spouse, I got my kid, and for me, a relationship these days is something that's, you know, it's got a strength to it, and I find that that's, at least when writing, like, I know in the distant future, I have plans in my story for romance stuff, but it's something that's going to be, you know, just sort of, an aspect of the story, not the main one. And don't get me wrong, there are people who love romance, like there are people who love harem stories.
I only wish that like there were like more realistic harem stories, but there's no market for them, right? Because like people who read, like who were like, oh, this is a harem story, I'm not gonna read it, and then people who like harem are going to be disappointed that the main guy isn't like gathering old chicks, bruh. Right, that was the bad impression of people who read harem. Like, I don't mean to disparage anyone, but there is that sort of like security through numbers kind of thing that's in there, right?
Mushoku Tensei hits the harem vibes. Yeah. It's not my particular vibe, but it's definitely like that hits a good a healthy harem is I guess what you call it, because the end of the story, everyone's happy, everyone's got wonderful kids, and yeah.
So like there's this guy or girl, I guess, on Railroad called Bluefish Cake. A Bluefish Cake. One word.
Familiar, but...
And if you're looking at their profile and at their fictions, zero follows, zero favorites, zero reviews, just even like the standard avatar. And they've written four stories. Between Worlds. Sexy Sect Babes, Sexy space Babes, and Sexy Steampunk Babes.
Okay.
Right?
And
like they're like 1,200 pages long. Like, and they're all very well rated. And they have like 14,000 average views and 1,000 followers. Because no one wants that thing to show up in their follow list.
I didn't even think of that, but yeah, that'd do it.
Right? Like even a story called like Between Worlds, they didn't want to show up. But then like Sexy Sex Babes, like I haven't read it yet. Of course you will set up Maddox. But yeah, he's got 6,000 followers and 25,000 average views. That doesn't quite
there's something compute. there's something not
Yeah. But yeah, like, still uploading. Still uploading.
I was going to say, like, maybe they're all finished or something, but no, yeah.
Yeah, some of them are stubs, and then, like, yeah, still uploading for 60 Steampunk Babes, which is, like, hard to say. But yeah, like, did you know that, like, Beware of Chicken was supposed to be a harem?
I did not. That wouldn't surprise me, but yeah.
You can listen to it on the Casual Farmer podcast. That should be out any day now. Like, we're recording this on the 11th of August. And so yeah, it's then, and then, like, he did write that next thing again, right? He did write the harem part of it again, which is the Beware of Chicken but alternate universe where he gets does get sent to the Casual Farmer is a great dude. Really, just great. Like, there was a reason why he picked, like, a rooster as, like, the image, right? And, like, why he calls him Big D and everything. But then, like, the story just kind of, like, went off on into this, like, kind of cozy thing, and just continued writing that. So he's cool with it.
If it works, it works, right?
It does. Speaking of, like, we've been shouting out people left and right, but what's a shout out?
There is, it's called Run Hero. It's Run !! Hero. They haven't hit Rising Stars. It's a really charming little fantasy story. It has the best cover I think I've ever seen on a lit RPG. Yeah, Run Hero. So they, right when I started putting up my story, they were just offering shout outs to literally anyone on Royal Road, not because they wanted to, not because they were asking for anything in particular, but just like, hey, I put up my stories, I know other people are drawing to, I'm going to shout out some other stories. And I was like, oh, that's really neat. I shouted them out once initially, and then I put another little addendum later on, because I really like their story. I think it's really cute. I think it's got, like, nice little cozy vibes to it. And I think it has one of the best covers I've ever seen, apart from the font choice, which is awful. But I shouldn't talk, because my font choice is awful.
I mean, like, yeah, just like put a little, like, make it a little bit bigger. Put a little
put something
bit of, like,
around it to, yeah, to capture. Yeah. But yeah, but no, a wonderful little story. I like it, and I've been recommending it to everybody who asked me something recently. So I'm like,
okay. In a world where magic rules, a group of kids from Earth is unexpectedly summoned to become the realm's new heroes. Transported to a land filled with enchantment and ancient mysteries, they are thrown into a tutorial dungeon to prepare for the challenges ahead. However, a catastrophic accident occurs. With only 5 years to prepare for the final battle, Max and his friends must win this race against time. They must overcome the trials of this magical world and rise as the heroes they were destined to be. Well, I'll take that, because I'll do that. I'll try, but it's hard. I'm doing my best.
Oh my god! Right?
No, yeah, because my name is Max. So anyway, I have already, you know, Ultimate Level 1, the story.
Yes.
So by Sean Wilson. Yeah. And he named that main character after me and a buddy of mine.
That's nice.
Host of Merchant Crab fame. Yeah. Yeah. Main character is, like, literally called Max Hoist. And then he, like, shaves this guy's head and has him almost pee himself a line in the first fucking line, the fucking thing. I'm like, thanks, John. It's super nice of you.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate it. And then he friggin' goes out and, like, has, like, the bestseller on his hands.
Oh, like, yeah, no, I have. Jeez, I was like, the story sounds familiar. I've read the first book.
Yeah. It's completely going through the roof. Okay, good. That was shout outs. Anything else you want to mention before we head off this podcast, this main podcast, and then go into the bonus material?
No, I'll save the good stuff for the bonus material.
Oh wow, that's very nice, because the bonus material is behind a paywall. I like your sadism here. Yeah, that's financial sadism. If you guys want to support a podcast, if you liked what you've heard here, please do leave a like, leave a comment, follow, subscribe. You know all the drills. And if you want to support me financially, go to https:// CritRPGPodcast.com. There's links to all sorts of ways you can support me. You can buy merch. You can subscribe to Patreon. You can do all sort of stuff. Yeah, I got merch now. I got like shirts and I got stickers. I still need to like get some better stickers because the ones I ordered are okay, but I can do better, you know. And then yeah, the other thing is if you support me like that, I'm able to pay my editor more. So I'm not making money off this podcast. I'm actually in the minus. But I want to pay my editor because they're doing a great job and they're amazing. So, well, Guy, if it's even your real name.
It's not.
It's not.
I'm sorry, it's not. But it's not. I'm more of a Steve. No, clearly a Steve face going on here.
Another myth busted. Okay, so any last words?
No, I think it's been a considerable length of time, so no.
You should go.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. I believe it or not, I do appreciate having someone to rant about my work with who isn't my spouse, because she is sick and tired of me.
Yeah. Well, probably not. Probably not.
She's probably sick and tired of hearing me talk about my daily stats.
Well, that probably, yes. But always remember, like, people are saying nice things about you behind your back. So that's a threat. And yeah, that's it. Thank you, everyone, for listening and or watching. And I'll see you next time. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on,